Hello and welcome to The Laydown, a podcast where three booksellers from Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, New Hampshire chat about all things literary. My name is Ryan. I use she, her pronouns.
My name is Hillary. I also use she, her pronouns.
My name's Joe. I use they, them pronouns.
So we have a very important topic that we're going to discuss later in the episode. But before we tackle that, let's talk about what we've been reading recently. I don't know about you two, but I've been reading a lot recently. I just friended someone new on Storygraph, which is a little bit like Goodreads, except that instead of being owned by Amazon, it's owned by Black women, which is awesome.
Love them.
But it's a reader tracker thing. It helps you keep track of what books you've read. You can write reviews on there, whatever. And this person friended me and then said, wow, you know, like, I also read a lot of books simultaneously. I have a lot of friends who read books simultaneously. 16 is a lot, huh? And I went, oh, no! And I went back and I counted, and I have 16 books listed as currently reading. I will say, a lot of them are not actually active current reads. I put them down months or years ago, and I just refuse to put them in the did not finish pile.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, I might finish them someday. I don't know.
This should be called the bedside table.
So I won't be talking about 16 books, I promise. But, yeah, but I've been reading a bunch. I'm about to wrap up my last two author interviews for the summer. There's been a lot.
I'm impressed, yeah. Ryan.
Thank you.
You have been interviewing some heavy hitters.
Yes.
And a lot of people.
As of recording this, let's see, who's up right now? If you haven't listened to these, you can go back after this episode and listen. Let's see. We've got Jessica Chiarella just went up this past weekend as we're recording this. She was awesome. I actually came into the bookstore to record that interview, and my normal recording space, which is tucked in the back of the cafe, was under construction.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy. And I ran around the store like a crazy person trying to find a quiet spot and eventually just plopped down in the middle of the store and just recorded. And it sounded great. you can, I think, hear the phone ring a couple of times, and that's about it.
Good. I remember that day. That was
intense. Stressful. God bless. Jessica Chiarella was so patient and so kind and understanding. What a doll. Other interviews that are up, Emily Henry is up.
Emily Henry has two books on the paperback bestseller, yeah. New York Times.
And they've been on there consistently.
For a long time. Yeah. She was
Beach Read and
People We Meet on Vacation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She was awesome. Riley Sager. Got Riley Sager.
Also
in there.
On the hardcover bestseller.
So
New York
proud.
Times list.
So proud. He was great. Who else? By the time this goes up, I may have uploaded my Grady Hendrix interview.
Ooh.
He is my new best friend. he wrote so many of my favorite horror novels, Horror Store, and my best friend's Exorcism, and his new one is the Final Girl Support Group, and it's awesome. And I have a note about this, because the audiobook, when you listen to it, you're like, that's an interesting choice for an audiobook narrator. It's not your typical, like, soothing voice. It's not like a typical audiobook narrator. And there's a reason for that. The audiobook narrator of the Final Girl Support Group is Adrienne King, who is the original Final Girl from the Friday the 13th franchise. And she is Grady Hendrix's original favorite Final Girl, and she is what sparked his love of Final Girls as a kid. This has come full circle. You can hear all about it in the interview. It's amazing. He's amazing. She's amazing. It's great.
And there's tons in that, because I just finished listening to it. Like, you can tell that Friday the 13th was his favorite.
Oh,
there
yeah.
So many references to the kind of summer camp slasher. And I definitely, with that audiobook, if you speed it up just a little bit, mm-hmm. if, yeah. like, that...
That helps.
Yeah, that definitely helps in...
For sure. I loved that book so much. As a connoisseur of slasher horror movies and as a Jason Voorhees purist, I was very into this book in which it is... If... imagine if all of those movies, the Freddy movies, the Jason movies, the Michael Myers movies, if they were based on real events and the real women who survived them, like, had to go to therapy and, live their lives, you know, as people glorify their horrible tragedies that they survived. It's phenomenal. It opens with... their support group with their therapist, and they get the news that one of their members has been murdered, and that's where it kicks off. So someone is hunting down the final girls. It's fantastic. It's really, really, really good. Who else? I just interviewed Ace Atkins, who was very nice, very cool to talk to.
Can I just say one thing about Ace Atkins?
Yeah.
A book I'm going to talk about, Razorblade Tears by S.A. Cosby. I just heard an interview with S.A. Cosby on the New York Times podcast, book review podcast, and he was mentioning all his favorite Southern Gothic authors, and I was like, I gotta make this list, I gotta read all these people, and Ace Atkins was one of them.
That's so funny, because Ace Atkins recommends The Razor in the episode, in the interview. He was great. His book, The Heathens, is really interesting and really good, and definitely one of those... don't judge a book by its cover type stories. It's about three teenagers who are on the run, who are being accused of murder. And, you know, the main girl is very much like a hardened... People just say, like, oh, she's been giving her mom a trouble since she came out. Like, very, like, she's always in trouble, always, like, a very tough girl. And the main investigator, the main cop, is like, I just don't think she did it, and I don't think we should be, you know, punishing her just because she's an easy target. Like, I don't think we should be accusing her of this just because she's an easy target. But he's like going head to head with, you know, his partners, and like the other people on the force are like, no, she clearly did it. Like, it's really interesting, full of amazing characters. So that was a really good one. Who else? I've got Coming Up, which I don't know that they'll be up by the time this episode comes out. They might be if I'm ambitious. Otherwise, look for them in the next couple weeks. I will be interviewing Jasmine Guillory and Samantha Downing.
Nice.
Two very exciting authors. Jasmine Guillory, of course, the phenomenal author of romance novels. I am currently reading her book While We Were Dating, which is so cute. Oh, it's very like Hollywood and just cute and fun. Oh, I love it. And then Samantha Downing writes thrillers, and I just started her new one. It's called, I think, For Your Own Good, and it is, every chapter ends with a line that's like, okay, well, now I have to read the next chapter. Like, she's really good at hooking you and making you, like, devour this book. So you'll hear more about those in those interviews. Those are fantastic. I also just finished the new Rachel Harrison book. Y'all know I love Rachel Harrison, author of The Return. She's been on the podcast before. She has a new book out this year. I think it comes out in October. It's called Cackle, and it's about a witch. Oh, it's so good. It's not scary the way The Return is scary, but it is a really, really interesting look at different types of relationships, from romantic relationships to friendships to mentorships to even just, like, you know, casual acquaintances. It's really... really interesting, and of course, one of the main characters is a witch, and she lives in a haunted house, and she takes Annie, the other main character, under her wing, and kind of shows her own power that she just needs to unlock within her.
Sounds so good. I'm so excited about this one.
It is incredible. I will give a warning. If you have a thing about spiders, spiders play a huge role in this book. Not in a scary way. In more of like a the critters in Snow White kind of way. But it is spiders. So just like if you're squicky about spiders, just to, you know, heed that warning. Yeah, it is spectacular. I loved it. So much. And I read it as slowly as possible because I didn't want it to end. Because it's so good and I love the characters so much. I want so much more of them, but alas, I finished it. But that's all I'm going to talk about for my recent reads. Again, go listen to all of my interviews. Please, I did so many. I worked so hard on them. Please go listen to them. And go buy their books. Okay, who's next?
I just have a couple. I have more than a couple, but I'm just going to talk about a couple. Because we have a lot of other things to talk about.
It's true. It's true.
I'm going to do one of these books that Ryan hates it when I talk about.
Oh, no.
It's yet another Donald Trump book.
Oh, Hillary! No, all right. Go ahead.
I just read Landslide by Michael Wolff. And I know Michael Wolff gets a lot of bad press for being a hack and a this and a that. I got to tell you, this book is so entertaining and well written. It is a fast read and it is flabbergasting.
Mm.
If you like this genre of books, and I know it's a certain niche, but we have a lot of customers who like this kind of book. So
that's
for,
true.
For our customers who are into this kind of thing, do not stick up your nose about Michael Wolff. Read Landslide. You will not be sorry that you read it. It's super entertaining. It's sort of like a horror novel in a way. You know, it's
does it have a specific part of the Trump era that it's talking about?
It's all just before the election and just after the election.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It ends with, if you just want to cut to the chase, I would read the epilogue of it. The very end of it, he goes and interviews Donald Trump.
Oh my God.
Oh.
And basically it seems like it's a transcript of Donald Trump babbling in a really interesting way. So yeah, highly recommended, but it might keep you up at night.
Mm.
The other one I just want to mention is Razorblade Tears by S.A. Cosby, which I really love. And actually, I think it'll come up a little bit later. But Razorblade Tears, I wrote a review of it. I made it a staff pick. I wrote a review of it. And I just said off the top of my head, this is going to be coming to a big screen near you.
Hmm.
And I read yesterday that it's going to... Paramount just picked it up. It's because it's like the ultimate buddy story.
Yeah.
It is two ex-cons, middle-aged, one black, one white, from the South. Two guys who have been around the block who are completely homophobic, real toxically masculine. And they both have sons who fall in love and get married. And they're not very happy about it.
Hmm.
And they won't talk to them. And then the sons get murdered. And
wow.
So they've lost their children without coming to terms with them.
Oof.
And they get together to decide to figure out who killed them.
Wow.
And it is
a nice light read.
Oh, it is, but it's brutal. It's violent. I'm warning you. But if you like this kind of thing, and I do, this is sort of the literary version of a trashy thriller.
Mm-hmm.
S.A. Cosby's a wonderful writer.
Mm-hmm.
It's real Southern Gothic kind of thing. But he grew up in this milieu, and he says that this is a response to having men in his life who were like this and trying to find some redemption for them and understanding that you can overcome your the prejudices that have been imbued in you that really shrink your life and make you a person who finds it hard to love other people and be loved in return.
Hmm.
So it's It's a good read, and it deals with homophobia, it deals with sexism, it deals with racism, white supremacy. Hard to put down. I did it in a day. That is my second recommendation. Just a throwback. Every summer, I do a Stephen King book. And I had never read The Stand. And I just finished The Stand.
Awesome.
Stephen King is absolutely unique. I mean, he's very much like a modern day Dickens. And you can pick at Stephen King all you want. You can say, yeah, his dialogue is kind of weird, and not very realistic. His women, that's a little bit throwbacky, but he understands people in a really remarkable way. Yeah. And he knows how to write a plot.
Yeah.
He knows how to pace. I mean, this book is, 1,000 pages long? It's really hard to put it down.
Nice.
So if you haven't read The Stand, go out and read it. Be ready to forgive Stephen King for the flaws, because the good parts are just wonderful. He's a modern classic, my opinion.
Yeah, I definitely say also, if anybody out there has not read Stephen King but has seen movies of his books, like, you don't... And there are some really good movies of his books. Oh, I want to say that. But you don't quite get that thing that you were talking about with his understanding of people. I mean, The Shining is just incredible book. Yeah. An incredible look at, alcoholism. And I think sometimes that gets lost in translation when made into movies. So I know a lot of people who are like, oh, well, I mean, I've seen The Shining. I've seen Carrie. Definitely... read at least one or two of his books.
Yeah, I will say that some of the scariest characters in Stephen King novels are just the people.
Oh, yeah.
Far and away. Absolutely. Especially in It. The parents in It are infinitely more terrifying than Pennywise.
Yes, you are so, so right. And The Stand has so much to speak to about where we are right now. It was written in the 1970s. Yeah. He updated it in the 1980s. It reads like it was written yesterday.
Yeah.
And especially in this era of, it's about a plague that wipes out 99.9% of the people and the dogs.
Oh, puppers.
And how you come back from that. Yeah. And it's really, it's brilliant. It's truly brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, I could talk for hours about Stephen King. I have a lot of opinions about Stephen King. Most of them are good.
And we can't even get started on the It movies.
Don't get me started. It Chapter 1 is in my top 5 of all time.
Perfect horror movie.
It's a perfect horror movie. Come into the store and talk to me about it sometime. just come in and be like, Ryan, what did you think of It Chapter 1? And let's just do it.
See, I'm of the age where It, the television show, I don't know that can ever be topped for me, it's because it's like the movie of my mind. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I have not ever rewatched it.
It's deeply nostalgic. Yeah.
It's just I was in high school when that came out. And it scared me so badly. And so,
I mean, nobody can ever top Tim Curry in any role ever, anything he's ever done. But
this is a whole different thing.
It's really
okay,
good.
Now I'm going to have to watch it.
Yeah.
It is a I will be accepting no questions at this time. It's a perfect movie. Thank you and goodbye. It's so good. We're not going to talk about Chapter 2, though. That's a whole... But Chapter 1. Oh, perfect. Perfect.
All right, I'm handing it off to Joe.
All right. Okay, yes. All right. I've been... reading quite a lot, like Ryan. I've honestly been listening to a lot, which I'll talk a little bit about those. But the first thing I want to talk about, I read the actual physical arc of Lauren Groff's new book, Matrix.
Oh, I'm reading that now. Oh
my God, I really like it.
I'm liking it.
It was one of those books that I was enjoying it, and I was reading it, and what have you. And then I was writing out my notes for things that I wanted to talk about on here, and it was like, oh, wait. Hold on. Oh my God, this is brilliant. It's gorgeous, and I'm going to try my hardest not to get too into the weeds on medieval history, because anybody who knows me, like, a medieval or early modern historical fiction is my jam.
Yeah.
And so this is a novel about two people who maybe were the same person, Marie de France and then Mary Abbess of Shaftesbury. So Marie de France, it was kind of the preeminent female writer of the Middle Ages, known for writing these poems called Lay, and they were about courtly love, so kind of unconsummated relationships between a knight and a lady. And some people have theorized she is also Mary, the Abbess of Shaftesbury, who is also the half-sister of Henry II. Mm. So Lauren Groff kind of combines these two people who, again, maybe they were the same person. And it's just, it's gorgeous. It is so deeply queer in just this beautiful way. She has Marie write the lay about, like, for Eleanor of Aquitaine, as opposed to her husband. Like, she's infatuated with the Queen of England. And it's just, it's all about relationships between women, and it's not just romantic relationships, but that's definitely in there. But she becomes the abbess of this abbey, and she just creates this world of only women. When I was thinking about it, I honestly think if you flipped the Bechdel test, and like, it, are there two named male characters who talk to each other about something other than a woman? No, there isn't. Like, and it gets more and more insulated throughout the book, but it's just this really interesting look at this space, especially in medieval times, where women weren't allowed to, not a lot of women knew how to read or write. Like, a lot of the female writers from that time were anchoresses and nuns, because they were the only ones who had that luxury. And so this kind of weird balance of this extremely restrictive life of, you live in an abbey and you aren't going out and seeing people or really doing anything other than being a nun, but then it also opens up this whole experience of, you know, being outside of this very male-dominated culture.
It frees the life of the mind.
Yes, yeah, exactly. That is a good way to put it, that it is so. Yeah, that kind of dichotomy there is just fascinating, and yeah, it's gorgeous, and it's really good historical fiction. Like,
That when you describe it to people, that Lauren Groff, who, you know, her other books have been about sort of modern male-female relationships, and people are like, what, a medieval nunnery, and you know, I'm maybe like 40 pages into it, but if you like historical fiction at all, it is gorgeous.
It's really, really well written, and I honestly had not read Lauren Groff before this, which I know is kind of like, she's always been on my radar, but this, I was like, oh, this is the one, this is for me. And yeah, no, it's gorgeous, and I would definitely recommend it to anybody. Even if historical fiction isn't your thing, but you've liked her other books, just interested in relationships between women, it's very good. And then, like I said, I've been listening to a lot of audiobooks. Like, a lot. I just finished The Project by Courtney Summers, which is a YA book. It took me like a day to listen to it. If some people may be familiar with her first book, Sadie.
Yeah,
same author.
Gotcha.
About a woman whose older sister joins a cult after their parents die, and Lo, who's the main character, doesn't hear from her for years and years, and then she witnesses the death of another member of this group and decides to investigate, and she goes and is offered an opportunity to write a profile about the project, that's what they're called, to kind of humanize them to the world, but she's gonna figure it out, and as she does, she starts to think that maybe they're not so bad.
Oh my god.
But it's a cult. It's very tense. It's very good.
I have to add that to my queue right now.
Yeah, it's really it's
me too.
Very, very good. And it's very much like Sadie, based on the relationship between these two sisters. So some of the chapters are from Lo's perspective, and then some are from her sister B's perspective of like how she ended up in this group. And yeah, no, it's really good. I do think you would really like it, Ryan.
Oh, I'm excited.
So that's what, again, lots of other audiobooks, but that was one of my favorites that I've listened to recently.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, adding that to my queue right now. Okay. So, our main topic, we're going to get serious for a minute, and then we'll lighten it back up a little bit. This month, there were two incidents that occurred in the indie bookstore world that were upsetting and disappointing, and we're going to talk about it a little bit. So the first one, folks may know about the Indie Next list, which, you know, we get the physical monthly sort of pamphlet that highlights the top books nominated by indie booksellers. There's a weekly digital publication of that. And one of the ones that came out this month, one of the weekly publications, highlighted a book, a YA anthology called Blackout. It's by Danielle Clayton, Tiffany D. Jackson, Nick Stone, Angie Thomas, Ashley Woodfolk, and Nicola Yoon. It's a beautiful anthology. Highly recommend. Written all different love stories written by people of color. And so that was featured on the list, but the cover art that they put next to the title was for a different book with the same title written by a person who is a known right-wing conservative racist. This was an issue. This was not great. The authors of Blackout were really hurt by this, really upset. Of course, apologies were made. It was fixed online, but the damage was done. This was an infraction that could have been avoided with a simple Google search, and unfortunately, it was not avoided, and people were really, really hurt by that. So that was the first thing that happened. The second incident, maybe a week later, not even, happened when indie bookstores all across the country received their white boxes, which is a box that we get every month, and it's filled with advanced reader copies, sometimes finished copies, marketing materials. It's really fun to open. It's always got really great goodies, and it gets us all excited about books that are coming out.
We all fight each other to open it.
Like, you know, it's an exciting thing. Like, the white box comes in and everybody goes, oh, the white box is here. Like,
yeah, you get somebody to cover the register so you can go dig cover the desk. I want to go see everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Imagine the horror when booksellers all across the country opened their white box to discover a deeply reviled dangerously transphobic book right on top. I'm not going to say the name of the book. I don't want to give it any more buzz than it's already gotten. But this is a book that is just, I mean, in the wrong hands, this book is devastating.
Dangerous.
It is a dangerous, dangerous book. It is a violent book. It is deeply transphobic, and it is a known book. It is known that it is transphobic because it's not a new book. Mm-hmm. It's been out for over a year. It recently came out in paperback, which I think is why the publisher, pushed for it to be in the white box. But this was a book showing up in a box that is, you know, from an organization that prides itself on being a safe place and an inclusive place. It was really triggering. It was really deeply upsetting, and it caused a lot of discourse online, in bookstores, among booksellers. It was a huge issue. We are, of course, all, you know, holding folks accountable and waiting to hear how they're going to fix this and make it better. In the meantime, it is a book that you will not find on our website. You will not find on our shelves. We're going to pretend it doesn't exist. It was a really, really horrible situation. And we don't want to see that repeated ever again. What we're going to do today, instead of lingering on the trauma of both of these incidents, is that we are going to give space for some books by and about trans folks and by and about Black, Indigenous people of color. I'm excited to highlight some of these books. Some of them you will have heard us gush about on the podcast before. Some of them are new. Let's get into it.
Because we've got a lot.
We all have big stacks. I'm going to run through mine super quickly because I actually haven't read everything that's in my stack. I just know that I want to shout out the authors. So right off the bat, I want to shout out the duology Once in Future and Sword in the Stars by A.R. Capetta and Corey McCarthy. They are a married couple. I love them dearly. I've met them. They're wonderful. And they are both trans, which is amazing. They are such cool people. I have followed their journeys, and I'm so proud of them, and they're doing great things. This is a King Arthur story, but it is gender-bent gay King Arthur in space. And it is incredible. It's compulsively readable. The characters are amazing. And you're hard-pressed to find a cisgendered straight character in the entire book. It is deliciously queer, and I love it so much. Highly, highly recommend those books. They're amazing. I also want to shout out Felix Ever After by Kaysen Callender, which is a beautiful book about self-discovery and coming to terms with who you are. I read this one, I listened to it, and it was one of those books where I was, like, listening to audiobooks while doing something else. I think it was, like, processing online orders or something, and I, like, had my headphones in and I was listening. And this one started, and I just stopped what I was doing and sat back and listened. Like, it is gorgeous. It is so lovely. It's at times so heartbreaking, and you just want to hug the main character and be like, it's gonna be okay. You're gonna be okay. It's beautiful. I highly recommend it. That's by Kaysen Callender. And then a few others, obviously, Aidan Thomas, who wrote Cemetery Boys, has a new one called Lost in the Neverwoods, which I just started listening to on Libra FM, and it is very sweet, and I'm loving it so far. Very sweet little fantasy. The Meet Cute Diary by Emery Lee is, I have to actually read the little flap, because this book sounds so cute. I haven't started it yet. I have it at home. I have the ARC. But listen to this. This is so cute. Noah Ramirez thinks he's an expert on romance. He has to be for his popular blog, The Meet Cute Diary, a perfect collection of trans meet cutes and happily ever afters. There's just one problem. All the stories are fake. What started as idealized fantasies of a trans boy afraid to step out of the closet has grown into a beacon of hope for trans readers across the globe. When a troll exposes The Meet Cute Diary as fiction, Noah's world unravels. The only way to save the diary is to convince his fans that the stories are true. But how can he spin fiction into fact without any proof? Then Drew walks into Noah's life, and the pieces fall into place. Drew is willing to fake date Noah in order to save the diary. But as Noah's feelings for Drew transcend their staged romance, Noah quickly realizes that dating in real life isn't quite the same as finding love on the page. With The Meet Cute Diary and Noah's heart hanging in the balance, Noah will have to choose between following his own expertise or discovering that some of the most romantic endings are the ones that go off script. Oh my God, I'm so into it.
Love a fake date.
Oh, it's love one of my favorite tropes, a fake dating trope. Oh my God, I love it. And then I want to shout out some of my favorite Black authors. So, Talia Hibbert, who wrote, she's got the Brown Sisters trilogy. So Get a Life, Chloe Brown, Take a Hint, Danny Brown, Act Your Age, Eve Brown. They're so cute. They're such good romances. They're very steamy. They're beautiful. I love them. I love each of the sisters. Each book that I was reading, I was like, oh, no, this is my favorite sister. And then I would read the next one, and I was like, no, wait, this is my favorite sister. They are amazing. Very quick reads.
One of the sisters queer? Bi?
Yes. I think one of them is bi. They all end up with men. But they are all Black women, and they are delightful. They are quirky and sweet, and oh my God, I love them. Another one I want to shout out is Honey Girl by Morgan Rogers. Morgan Rogers, who I believe is non-binary, they're queer, I know that much. Honey Girl is, I've gushed about it here so much. Oh my gosh, what an amazing book. It's a beautiful romance. It's a beautiful coming of age story. It is all about finding yourself and, changing expectations and coming to terms with things. And I love it. And it all kicks off with A Marriage in Vegas, which is like the best way to start a book ever. You know you're in for a ride when you wake up married in Vegas. And that one is very queer and very beautiful. And then last but not least, I have to gush about Legendborn by Tracy Dion. Oh, listeners, if you haven't read this book yet, what are you waiting for? It's magical. it's actually, is this one also a King Arthur story? I can't remember. Yeah, this is also a King Arthur story. I have a type. and it is, oh my gosh, it's a story about grief and love and, oh, taking your place on the throne and Black girl magic. And it is, again, you'll read it in like one sitting. You can't put it down. The characters are so well-rounded and so amazing. And I just want to scoop them all up and give them little kisses on their cheeks. I love this book. The magic is so good and so cathartic when it comes out, and it's just like it explodes out in this amazing way. And I just, like, as soon as the main character starts to let herself be herself, she becomes so powerful, and it is so incredible. This book is delicious. So that's Legendborn by Tracy Dion. So those are the ones I'm going to talk about. I'm going to throw it off to, I think, Hillary next. What do you got for us?
Let's see. Well, there, you know, it occurred to me when we started, when this whole thing happened, that I'm in my 60s. I think there are a lot of people my age who grew up, you know, where I think it was, Gore Vidal who wrote the book Myra Breckinridge? Does anybody know about this?
Maybe.
I mean, it was like this, you know, 1960s book about a trans woman who was like sort of like Mae West. Okay. I'm not recommending the book.
No.
I mean, what I'm saying is, like, there was this sort of, you know, horrible, grotesque image of trans people that I grew up with, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we are damaged by this. And I am now a grown woman with a lesbian daughter and a trans lesbian daughter. And it has been a journey for me. I mean, I've always been very liberal, but you can think you're totally liberal, and then you've got to, like, wrap your mind around the insidious way your society and the way you've been brought up has gotten inside your head.
Mm.
And one way we can all do this is by reading the words of trans people.
Yeah.
You know, and there are many, many memoirs out there written by trans people. But one of the very earliest memoirs by a trans woman was written by a travel writer and essayist and history writer who had been published for years under their dead name. I don't even think I want to say it.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Jan Morris. And in 1974, she published a book called Conundrums, which was a book about coming out and saying, I, a well-known writer, I'm a trans woman, and I'm transitioning, and this is my story.
Wow.
And it was a big deal when that happened. And this is in an era where you have people like Germaine Greer, you know, supposedly, you know, big feminist icon, who came out and talked about in her books how disgusting trans women were to her. You know, this is like the original TERF.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Jan Morris has said over the years, the only way to respond to that is with kindness.
Mm.
And it's making me cry just thinking about this, because Jan Morris is a brilliant woman. She died a few years ago, wrote dozens of books. Her most famous work is a trilogy called Pax Britannica, which is all about the British Empire. Jan Morris is Welsh and had always lived in Wales. So highly regarded as an intellectual, and is just beloved in Great Britain, in spite of that kind of viciousness.
Yeah.
Because Jan Morris just kept going and saying, I return your bitterness and your hatred with kindness. It's just a very beautiful story. Stayed with her partner, Elizabeth, her entire life. Had multiple children.
Mm-hmm.
Died just loved. And there are two books out, still in hardcover. One is Jan Morris Thinking Again, A Diary. And the other one was published posthumously. She asked that it be published after she died. It's called Allegorizings by Jan Morris. And these books, I was showing this to Joe this morning.
Yeah.
They're just lovely. I mean,
they're so sweet.
Thinking Again, A Diary. She's talking about things like, she's read about a local farm that has pygmy goats and how cute pygmy goats must be. And then she goes there and they're like demons on her. So they're just sweet and lovely. And you know, if you're a person who's thinking, I can't wrap my head around how someone can be transgender, like, pick up these books. Mm-hmm. These are just beautiful, humanizing, lovely, well-written books. So Jan Morris, Thinking Again, and Allegorizings by Jan Morris. There's another book which I've only looked at a little bit called The Natural Mother of the Child, mm-hmm. a memoir of non-binary parenthood. And this is about a trans man who wanted to have children and who had and became pregnant, and about the difficulty of navigating mm-hmm. obstetrics and pregnancy mm-hmm. when you know you're male, mm-hmm. you know. And it's very funny in places. It's infuriating in places. It is... You see all of the microaggressions and transgressions that transgender people have to endure in every little thing they do. So take a look at that. The Natural Mother of the Child by Chris Malcolm Belk. And, you know, maybe I won't go through all of these. I have a stack of transgender memoirs here. There are so many really well-written memoirs by trans people. Janet Mock was one of the first people who wrote one. Janet Mock is a black trans woman, and her book came out in 2013, I think, mm-hmm. and is considered a classic. She's kind of an icon. I have Jennifer Finney Boylan's books here.
Oh,
Jenny
love
Boylan
her.
is a beautiful writer. We did her book, Good Boy, My Life and Seven Dogs, in our book club this year, and... And then her first memoir was She's Not There, A Life in Two Genders. Mm. And that's about being an academic and having to go to your friends and say, I'm actually a woman, and having to deal with the kind of ignorant pushback that you get from people you love who are personally hurt that you should decide not to be the person that they thought you were. Mm. Also, Fairest by Meredith Talusan, this is a really interesting memoir. Meredith grew up in the Philippines and has albinism. Mm. So not only was dealing with being a Philippine albino, but is trans. Mm. And, you know, ultimately has to, like, emerge all through that to come out as a woman and comes to America, goes to Harvard, and it's kind of an amazing story. And I guess I'll wrap that up there. But there's a couple of other books I wanted to mention. And Ursula Le Guin, as far as I know, was not LGBTQ, but Ursula Le Guin was deeply feminist and wrote this book, The Left Hand of Darkness, this is the 50th year anniversary, so this is this 1969.
Wow.
And this book is about an ambassador gets sent from one planet to another planet where nobody has sex. It's completely gender fluid. The only time people have asex is when they're procreating.
Wow.
And so it's very much about how gender identity crushes people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was written at a time when people were really beginning to talk about gender fluidity. So I think it's worth it as a mind-opening experience to people who are having difficulty understanding what the issues are. As science fiction often is, you know, you'd use metaphor to break open a societal issue. And it's beautifully done in The Left Hand of Darkness by Ursula K. Le Guin. And then the last two books I'm going to talk about super fast. One is, I already talked about Razorblade Tears by S.A. Cosby. There's a transgender woman in this book. Mm. I should say no more than that because it's kind of a spoiler. I didn't say that much. But there's a lot in this book about the LGBTQ plus community and discussion of transgender, what it is to be transgender, as well as being a great thriller. And the last one I want to talk about is a book by a Black author, Britt Bennett, The Vanishing Half, which was a huge seller this year.
Yeah.
It's a really, really terrific book. It's about two very beautiful young Black women in the 50s?
50s, 60s, yeah.
And they're light enough that they can pass.
Right.
And they leave home, and one remains in the Black community, and one goes far away and passes as white. And then it's about how many, many years later, their children in, you know, that book kind of way meet up, unbeknownst to one another at first, and have to deal with the legacy of what their mothers have done. But there's an amazing transgender character in this book that's one of the central characters. So it's not just about race. It's also about gender identity. And it is so beautifully written. It was one of my favorite books of last year. Highly recommend it. I expect it'll probably be out in paperback pretty soon. Cool. So Vanishing Half by Britt Bennett.
What do you got for us, Joe?
Yeah, so there are two that I really want to highlight that I'm currently reading, and then I'm going to go through a couple other things that I want to highlight but won't talk quite as much about. And so the first one is Light from Uncommon Stars by Rika Aoki, who is a trans woman. Main character is also trans. And this is coming out from Tor in September, I believe. Yeah, September of this year. I'm reading the arc of it. And it is just so good. It's so nice. It's so sweet. There are three kind of main characters. Katrina being kind of the center of it, is a young trans girl who runs away from home with basically nothing other than some clothes and her violin. There's a violin teacher, Shizuki Satomi, who is known as the Queen of Hell. Yeah, because all of her students are incredibly talented and very successful, but then they seem to burn out very quickly and have kind of horrible ends, as if they may be paying for what they achieve. So, you know, it's...
What a great premise.
Oh, it's so great. It's fantastic. And then the third one is Lan Tran, who is an alien who has escaped the Galactic Empire and bought a donut shop in the San Gabriel Valley. And
oh my god,
so with does family,
of course. And so there's lots of flirting over donuts.
Yes.
And just adorable. I mean, all of the sci-fi, all of the kind of technology is a very much an homage to Star Trek.
Yes.
There's so many sweet little moments that it's... Oh, it's
you are
so
nerding
precious.
Out so hard.
I love
loving
this.
I wish people
this.
Could
it's
see Joe
so,
right now.
It's so cute. It's so sweet. Yeah, one of our coworkers actually picked it up, read the first page, set it down, and put my name on it. He was like, oh, this is Joe's book, I guess. This I can't take this book. It's Joe's. It's so good. The back copy compares it to Good Omens, which I think, like, in terms of, it's not maybe as laugh out loud hilarious, though it definitely has a lot of humor to it, but it has that element of like this sweet life affirming story within this larger story that shouldn't have, like, it's about runaway kids and somebody selling their soul to the devil to become a successful violinist. Like, that's not... It shouldn't be as sweet and wholesome and lovely as it is, and it's just this found family. Beautiful. I'm so excited. I'm about halfway through it. I'm so excited for it to come out.
No,
September. Comes out in September.
Yes, I can definitely. I already have a couple coworkers who are on the list of, to take it. So, yeah. But I expect to pass it around to our coworkers. It's, yeah, it's really, really sweet. And I kind of am just savoring it right now. Mm. The other one I'm listening to, I'm partway through, is Sorrowland by River Solomon, which is, it starts with a 15-year-old girl who's pregnant, who's just escaped a black separatist cult. And she gives birth in the woods to twins.
Oh my God.
They live, yeah, it is definitely as sweet as Light from Uncommon Stars is. It goes in the other direction. It's very intense and harrowing in parts, but very well written. And she raises these kids till they're about 4 in the woods, and then something is happening to her body that isn't good. Like, she's in a lot of pain. There seems to be a growth on her back. She has these things called hauntings, or that's what she calls them, and they seem to be flashes of the past, like traumatic situations, not her past, but this kind of collective past, and so a lot to do with, like, generational trauma that black folks experience, and Vern, the main character, is also intersex, and so it's incredibly intense, but River Solomon just handles it beautifully. Fair writing is just gorgeous. I'm really, really enjoying the audiobook. And River Solomon is a non-binary author, so it's, yeah, I would highly, highly recommend it to anybody.
What was the other River Solomon book?
An Unkindness of Ghosts.
Wasn't there another one about the mermaids?
Oh, the deep. There was a book based on a song from David Diggs.
Yeah, so that's the deep.
I have not actually read any of Fairother's stuff.
Yeah, I haven't read that one.
But this was getting really good reviews, and it's been gorgeous. And that I'm probably like 60-70% of the way through that one. But I definitely like it. And then just a couple others I'm gonna shout out, for anyone, if anybody hasn't read anything by Akweke Emezi, non-binary Nigerian author, wrote Freshwater and The Death of Vivek Oji, as well as Pet, which is a just gorgeous writing about trans and non-binary experience. Gorgeous. You just absolutely, if you haven't read any of their work, you should definitely, definitely look into that. I have Upright Women Wanted by Sarah Gailey, which really anything by Sarah Gailey is fantastic. Upright Women Wanted is just
incredible.
I think they describe it as an anti-fascist queer Western novella, so yep.
So there you have it.
Yeah, just go
and
for it.
And shout out to librarians.
It's about, anti-fascist librarians. Beautiful, gorgeous. I gave one of Sarah Gailey's books to the person I'm dating, lent it to them. They've read, like, everything in the past 3 months. They're just an incredible author.
What was the one that we...
Magic for Liars?
The Echo Wife.
Also
yes,
phenomenal. That, so, yeah.
Yes, I like Magic for Liars, but the Echo Wife I thought was fantastic.
They're really, really great.
Yeah.
And then Detransition Baby by Tori Peters I have here, because I think it's a book that I know I have heard a lot of trans folks expressing hesitation about, because the idea of detransitioning is such a fraught topic. I think Tori Peters is a trans woman. I think it's a really well-written, good book. The characters are not necessarily likable. Mm-hmm. They are going to say things that you're going to be like, ugh, ooh. But think of the amount of cis men who are writing books about unlikable men doing horrifying things. Like, right. trans people don't owe the world likability. Yes. And I think this book is a really good example of, like, just certain realities. Like, it just, the people in it are very human. Mm-hmm. And it, yeah. So I would definitely, if you've been on the fence about that one, it's definitely worth reading. I do think that's a very good one. And then the last thing I'm going to shout out, and I feel like it's a super weird thing to shout out on a bookstore podcast because you can't get it from the bookstore. but it's Stone Butch Blues by Leslie Feinberg. And if you haven't read this, it's just a foundational queer text, foundational trans text. It is, you can purchase a physical copy on LeslieFeinberg.net.
Okay.
Or you can download the PDF for free off of the website, completely above board. I'm not telling you all to illegally download anything. It's about butchness in the 60s and 70s. I mean, trigger warnings abound in terms of sexual assault, police violence, but if you don't know much about this, like, pre-Stonewall and then, like, that period of our history, it's really, really important. When I was in college and took a LGBTQ lit class, the professor, it was out of print at the time, and the professor photocopied the entire book for us because he was like, this is too important for you all to not read. So definitely, definitely check that one out if you haven't. I think that's what I've got.
That's awesome. I also just want to shout out Charlie Jane Anders.
Oh yes. Yes, absolutely. You know,
we've talked about her on the podcast before. We love Charlie Jane, but...
And can I tell just a little story from... So I was the one who opened the white box. It was that day after all of this happened. A little non-binary kid came into the store with their mother, and the mom had said that she had looked on our website and read our staff bios and was like, okay, this is a safe place to take my kid, and came in looking for LGBTQ kids books. Mm-hmm. And we gave a bunch of recommendations, me and one of our other coworkers who's also non-binary. It was a great experience, and I've definitely had multiple experiences with queer kids coming in for books, and I just kind of want to put out there that if you're a parent who needs a safe space for your kid, please, please come in. We will give you lots of recommendations. We will be respectful of your kid's pronouns. It also goes for adults, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyone.
And if you're a parent who's struggling with it, please, please come in. Mm-hmm. We will talk with you. We'll get you resources, like Hillary was talking about, some of these books, to understand the experiences of trans people. It's really important. So, like, please know that we're here for you if you need a safe space, if you need recommendations. Like, it was a really sweet moment, and they bought some really cute books, and it was great.
My
it was
heart.
Really good. Good
yeah,
end to that day.
And if you're a troll,
don't even try.
Let me just tell you, there's some short, tough people in this store who will be...
If you don't know, Hillary's kind of scary. Hillary and Ryan, honestly, like, I'll be the soft little one in the background, and Hillary and Ryan will come for you.
We'll take care of you. I love that. Yeah, no, we are a safe place, and we strive to always be a safe place and to nip things in the bud when they arise. Always feel free to come in and chat with us, and we'll point you in the right direction. And
yeah, we have a lot of queer people on staff, and everybody who isn't on staff is respectful, and we'll definitely help you out.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, all that being said, there are, you know, we talked about a lot of books today. There are even so many more Books by trans authors, books mm-hmm. about trans folks, books by people of color. You know, we have lists upon lists on our website. Come in, talk to us. We'll give you all these recommendations and more. Yeah, we just really wanted to lift up those voices this episode.
And you know, who we should shout out to is Equality Health Center.
Yes, our friends across the street
from us. So you can if you're visiting there, come and see us.
Come hang out.
And if you're here and you need some help,
need any resources
with any resources, they're right across the street, and they're amazing people.
They are. Yes. They're awesome. So, all right. Good talk, folks.
After school special.
This concludes your after school special.
And there's good pizza next door, too.
There you go.
Shout out to Constantly Pizza.
All you need.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Virtual events. Just events.
Oh, yeah.
We've had some in-person events. We've got some more coming. We have Joyce Maynard. We've got an event in August for Count the Ways.
Which is getting very nice reviews. I have not read it.
Oh, good. Yeah, I haven't read it yet. We have sci-fi author R.W.W. Green is coming back for 25 to Life. I believe that is an in-person event.
So exciting.
So exciting. Yeah, we had our first one was this month, and it went really well. And we, sold out of all the tickets, and people were really respectful, and it's really fun to be, getting back to this kind of phase of normalcy.
We've had two book clubs in person
yes.
now.
Yes.
And people are so happy to be back together.
It's so nice. People have missed the bookstore. Because I know a lot of people, even as we've been open for browsing, they either haven't been coming in or they've been in for, a split second to, come get their book and leave.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't had the option to, come in and hang out in the bookstore in 15 months. So it's... People are really, they miss it.
We have a really good hangout coming up for our August book club.
Oh, yeah. What is?
It's Pick-a-Palooza.
I love Pick-a-Palooza.
Pick-a-Palooza is when we decide our books for the coming year. So if you are interested in joining a book club, show up and come and talk to us about what books we should be reading.
Yes.
The book club is open to anybody who wants to attend.
It's free. Just show up.
It's free. You just show up. And you don't have to come to every club. You can come for just the books you feel like reading.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only an hour long. It's 5:30 to 6:30, usually the first Monday of the month. And it's nice, welcoming, friendly crowd. You'll make new friends. Fun. So, Pick-a-Palooza.
And that's how I ended up here. So.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, I was a book club member first. So.
Joe came with Joe's mom.
Yes, I did. My mom still comes when she can.
Yeah. I usually am not available Monday evenings for the book club, but I have had so many conversations with various book club members who come in and they're chatting with me about the next book club pick and things that they think we should read and then we get talking about our own tastes and they're like, oh, you should come to book club because you and I have very similar tastes. I don't think the two of us would sway the whole rest of the book club, but maybe.
Every year we pick this very ambitious list and then halfway through they're like, oh my god, these books are so sad and they're so long and they're so hard to read. So
come to Pick-a-Palooza and remind us of this and say halfway through do a light comedy.
Well, we might just pick half the books. Because oh, yes. I will tell you.
Did we do that last year or 2 years ago?
We picked, I think we picked most of them, and then we picked the last two. Okay. And but there are so many books coming out in September. Mm-hmm. It is unbelievable. Like the Lauren Groff book. Mm-hmm. There's a new Colson Whitehead coming out. Mm-hmm. There's a new Anthony Doerr book coming out. Oh my gosh. I mean, those are just a few of the heavy hitters who have big, big books coming out.
And definitely come to Pickapalooza if, even if you think that, like that, you're...
Yeah.
Type of books aren't picked often. Like, don't feel shy about coming and being like, I really like this romance, or mm-hmm. I like psychological thrillers. What if we did this? Like,
mm-hmm. yes, because you never know. People might jump on it and be like, yeah, let's do it. It'd be a good discussion.
Yeah, and if they don't, if the other people don't show up and just you show up with your really awesome books, then you'll get to pick them all.
That's true. That's very true.
Yeah, if you don't come, it's just going to be Hillary and I, and you know.
And it'll be all historical fiction and memoirs. And some sci-fi.
And like super depressing, sad books.
I'm here for it. I love it. Shout out to Libra FM for sponsoring us. Y'all have heard the spiel a million times, but sign up for a new account. Use the code LAYDOWN at checkout. You'll get a super awesome deal. We love them. They're good to us. And they support indie booksellers in so many ways. We love them. Thank you, Libra FM, for being the best.
Can I do a Libra FM pick?
Oh, my gosh. Oh. Yes.
Okay, here's my Libra FM pick. Mirrorland. By Carol Johnstone.
Okay.
Uh-huh. An awesome gothic sort of Scottish thriller about identical twin sisters, one of whom goes missing. They haven't spoken in many years. There is one who lives in the U.S. who goes back to work with the husband to try to figure out what happened to her sister. Mm. And it turns out the two sisters had a very traumatic childhood.
Oh, my gosh. Mm.
And the husband is living in the childhood home where all of the traumatic things happened. And it is just, it's hard to stop listening to it. And the woman who is the narrator, whose name eludes me at the moment, has the most amazing Scottish accent. She pronounces Mirrorland, Meadowland. And it has so many twists and turns, and I'm a person, Ryan, you know this about me. If you take one turn too many and you step over the edge, I am going to call you on it, and I'm going to say I am not recommending this book because you went too far. And this book has twists and turns like to the last page. And I was there for every one of them.
Nice.
So, Libro FM, great. Mirrorland by Carol Johnstone. Listen to it.
Awesome. Okay. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. Our website is gibsonsbookstore.com, and we're also on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. And we'll put those links in the show notes along with all of the books that were mentioned during this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the stacks. Bye! Bye.